And thank God, she looked at me, I looked at her, and we laughed and laughed. And I said, well, I guess there was a little karma left, wasn't there? So I guess it's over now. And then we just went in the bathroom and tried to wash her dress. But it's just like, sometimes these things are a little bit beyond our control sometimes. It was just, boom. I mean, it was like some part of me, I didn't even know was going to do it. Absurd, huh? So also you have to realize, I think I mentioned it several times, a woman came up to me and said, I want to finish this karma. No, you're not going to be able to finish this karma. This karma's long. These things take a long time. You just get it as far as you can, and then you try to just surrender it to Divine Mother. That's what I've had to do with quite a few things. It's just like, you know, if I face into this, I just get deeper into it. I'm just going to put it on the shelf. I'm going to go train over here. And then when I get a lot more clear, because it doesn't really have to do with him, it has to do with me. So as I get a lot more clear over here, then I can come back. And Master Eck also said, if you know for certain that you're not going to be able to pass a test, you should run away from it. Not permanently, but because he said it's not good to stay in a situation and reinforce the constant thought of failure in your mind. So if you know, if somebody's negativity, you have to exercise that very judiciously. But if someone, for example, if your negative response to them is just greater than you can handle, it's better to avoid them than to just constantly put yourself in reinforcing that. But that has to be acted on very carefully. But it can be. Does that answer your question? James? Surendra? You mean after we're out of this body that you go to the astral world and resolve it there? The question is, can you resolve the karma that you have with other people in the astral world and not here? Let's see. I don't, you know, almost all the answers I give you, well, actually all the answers I give you are because Swami taught it to me. So when you ask a question that I've never actually heard answered, I have to try to reason it out. You can still make progress in the astral world. The astral world isn't just a vacation. But they say that the conditions of the astral world, because you're in a vibration that's entirely suited to you, and if you're refined, you're in a refined atmosphere, the incentive to make progress is less. That's why it's a blessing to come back to a physical body where the dualities are stronger and you have to struggle more. But that wouldn't mean that you couldn't continue to make progress. So yes, of course you could work it out if you remained awake and motivated and in the clarity of that situation, we're able to see things more clearly than you could before. What you would probably do is you would get clarity and you would make a resolution, and then when you re-entered and re-encountered it, you would have that strength behind you. Because you would have to be able to face it down in some form or another. And you could do that just, you wouldn't have to have a material expression of it. You could do it just with consciousness. Of course you could. I'm not versed enough on how the astral world works to exactly answer that. Because you don't have to wait till the other person also resolves it. That's an important thing to remember. Even if he still hates you or she still hates you, if you have ceased to hate them, then they have to work it out on a proxy. They don't have to work it out on you.
In other words, there would be no communication between the two of you.
Oh, there could be, easily. I mean, I don't exactly know how the astral world works. But for example, Swamiji has said that we've all had a community in the astral world. That's why making community comes so easy to us. You know how many groups just struggle so hard just to have a community? I mean, they work over where to put the roads, where to put the garden, how to paint the buildings. I mean, just they struggle on the most fundamental levels. And Ananda just community is a byproduct for us. We just don't have to work at it. Swamiji said that's just because we've been a community in the astral world, we've been a spiritual family for so long. But he used that phrase, we've been a community in the astral world, which implies that we're together with the same souls a lot in the astral world. If you have misunderstandings, just losing your physical body doesn't, you know, take it out of you, so I suspect you're facing it. It's a very good question. I think I'll ask Swami if I get a chance, or Jyotish, see if somebody can give me a better answer to it. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. The question is, of course people enjoy disharmony. But enjoy is a funny word there, and you have to understand it properly.
Good.
No, that's not exactly the right word, because it's always dissonant. Disharmony is always dissonant to the soul, and it always deeply distresses the soul to be participating in disharmony. Hitler's soul was in deep distress by everything that he was doing, but the ego had so overridden it that the presence of the soul was deeply obscured. What you say is that the light was shining just as brightly, but he had moved far away from it. So the enjoyment is the habit of enjoyment, not genuine enjoyment. It's just, this is what I know. There was a woman who came to Ananda many years ago. She was quite mentally disturbed. She had been brought up in such a peculiar manner. We were trying to help her. It was very complex. She had been taking a lot of medication for very serious mental problems, and we were so naive, we thought, oh, we'll just be able to love her to health. And she stopped taking her medications, and we were trying to help her. It's very naive. But part of it is one very strong girl kind of took her under a wing and started parenting her, you know, helping her just do normal things like dress herself and bathe and just behave in a normal manner. And often this woman was very strong with her and sometimes would raise her voice and insist like this. And finally, she said, you know, do you like it when I yell at you like this? And the girl actually said, oh, yes. She said, it makes me feel close with you. Because her parents had always yelled at her constantly. And she was constant conflict with her parents. It was the only concept she had of how people related to each other. So when we related to her in that way, it was comforting to her. But you see how twisted that is? I mean, that was a very dramatically twisted example, but in many, many ways, we just grow used to certain things, and we think that's how it's supposed to be. And even just on the level of lack of refinement, people think that being drunk and rowdy and sort of kind of crazy, you know, we really got crazy, people say, like that's really fun. And the refined person just looks at it and just thinks it's appalling. But the person who's doing it actually enjoys it because they have no point of reference. But it's not their true nature. And so what you're looking at is when you see people who, quote, seem to enjoy disharmony, what they're doing is that they're trapped in delusion. And rather than feeling angry or betrayed by them, we should feel compassion. You see, this is the experience that I've seen with all these years with Swami Kriyananda. I wouldn't understand this except that I've seen it acted out. And again, this is what I tried to write in that book, which is he has no personal motive. He's entirely impersonal in the situation. Therefore, when he sees other people's behavior, he doesn't evaluate it in terms of how it affects him. He evaluates it only in terms of how it affects them. And then makes some effort to move them in whatever direction or to whatever extent they're willing to be moved towards something that will affect them in a better way. You see? And even if people cling to it, because they do enjoy it. But I think to the saints, we just look ridiculous. We enjoy so many things that we enjoy accumulating money. You know, we enjoy looking attractive. We enjoy exercising and using our physical bodies. And, you know, some of the saints just think, why would you want to even just be so physical as that? I mean, things that we think of are so terrific are a real come down from their level of reality. And so we just because we're standing here and somebody behind us is doing something that we already know is not pleasurable is just no different than the people who are in front of us looking at us and seeing us do something that they know is no longer pleasurable. And the only way that the whole thing can work is if we don't think about how it affects us, but only think about how it affects them. And that's the same question you were asking. When you think, how does it affect you? I mean, like that mother, when I was watching the child, you know, just slap the food away that the mother was trying to give it. I mean, it's very tempting for a mother to explain to a two-year-old things that the two-year-old doesn't understand because the child's behavior has really affected her. And of course, if you're training a child, you have to teach the child how his behavior has affected her. So I can see I'm getting off. It's not a good example. But it's because of what the child needs to learn. It's not for the sake of the mother. It's not to make the mother's life more pleasant, although ultimately that will be the result. But it's to make the child's life more pleasant. That's what you need. Does that make sense? But you see how expanded that is to not respond personally? It's an amazing, that's the top of the mountain. I think it's very valuable. I never believe in lowering the teaching. I think it's always important to know what the top of the mountain is and just know exactly where you stand in relation to it. You have a much better chance of reaching it if you do that. No, but I see, I know, but I just, if you want to, somebody else may teach that way, but I won't. After you know, John was saying that maybe we should not speak about the highest sometimes. We should just be, but I've been on this path since 1969. And I've lived a lot, and I've seen a lot. I've been in a position, a core position in Ananda. I've seen thousands of people. I've counseled hundreds, probably thousands. I've watched people succeed and fail on the spiritual path for many, many years, and I pay attention. And it's like, this is a path for self-realization. This is not a path for being comfortable. That's why it's not a mass movement. You know, that's just what it is. And I think we have to look at where we're really trying to go. And the thing is, if you settle for less, the whole thing, if you just emphasize the middle, the whole thing falls to pieces because there's no consistency. The whole path of self-realization is one consistent whole. And it's not just getting along. It's overcoming the ego, which just completely changes everything, completely changes everything. There's no middle ground on it. That doesn't mean there's no progression toward it. But in the end, there's no middle ground. If you want to dispute that with me, let's do it after class.
No, I don't mean to dispute.
Okay. But you're being very specific. I'm talking. Well, John, I can't endorse it. And I don't mind your having that point of view, but I don't want to turn the class over to that point of view because that's simply not the point of view I'm presenting now. I'm trying to express to people how high the mountain is and where to put your foot next. You know, simultaneously. That's why last week I spent all that time giving us these four stages so you could tell which way is forward. If your condition in life is, you know, morally asleep and you're honest enough to admit it, you know, then you have to just think about becoming selfish enough to move. You can't think about, you know, jumping all the way beyond that. I didn't explain it in all detail yesterday, but... Okay. John, I can't turn the class over to you. It's not fair. Okay. No, and I don't mind talking to you, but I can't turn the class over to you. Yeah. All right. Yes, Robert. Fussed up. That's a good phrase. Okay. In the clearest way of saying it, yes. However, no, that's not entirely true because you could have a completely impersonal, God-inspired response. But let's just say you actually are fussed up, okay?
Yeah, you have some friction or is there some kind of a charge or...
In you.
In you or between you.
Yeah.
And so it's likely karmic.
It is karmic.
Uh-huh.
Let me try to reframe what you're asking, okay?
So I'm saying something rhetorical and actually hoping that you'll reframe.
Okay, the question is, you know, when you have friction with people, I mean, this whole thing is about the wounded heart. So the friction that either comes because your heart is wounded and you respond that way, or the wound's being inflicted one way or another. And in keeping with what John and I were discussing about how much goodness is enough goodness, how much can we expect of ourselves? It's always a balancing act because you have to actually work at the level that you really are. But if you work at the level that you really are toward the ultimate freedom, then your techniques will be most efficient and they'll be the most long-lasting because you can just keep using them forever. So you always have this balance point of anytime anything in this world, let me think how to put this. Our true state of consciousness is completely centered, calm, and conscious of divine bliss. That's who we really are. And the game of life is like, remember how children used to play King of the Mountain? Did you ever play King of the Mountain, where you scramble up to the top of some heap and then everybody else tries to pull you off and then you try to just cling to that thing, and it's a great wrestling match and children have a fabulous fun time doing it? Well, all of life is like a big game of King of the Mountain. And to be King of the Mountain is to hold on to your peace, your kindness, your compassion, and your happiness at all times. And all around you are ringed all these forces of every single area in which you're vulnerable. Whatever you might be vulnerable about, not being respected, people not listening to you, not having the opportunity to express yourself, not being taken care of in the way you wanted, being disappointed by this, all of it, they're all around. And they all come up, and in one way or another, they grab whatever vulnerable part of you there is and try to get you off that mountain, and you have to struggle just to stay there. And at a certain point, you're very interested in all these opponents. Oh, this is the one from the past lives, and we were, you know, slaves together, and then he murdered me and ran away. Whack, whack, whack. You know, you get very interested. This is the astrological year in which this one would come. But after a time, it assumes a kind of sameness. And it all just becomes a generic effort. It becomes generic karma, is what I call it. It really doesn't make much difference where it comes from or why. It's just a force that's strong enough to knock you off center. And so the goal of the spiritual path, Master described it, is to be able to stand unshaken amidst the crash of breaking worlds. And that's what he says is your goal. So you see, in order to do that, you have to be so strongly rooted between yourself and the spirit that there's just no force that can come at you, whether it's other people's unkindness, whatever it might be, even physical pain, anything that can topple you off that mountain. Now, as we develop our skill in this game, we bring into it every dimension that we can think of. We use reason, we use devotion, we use willpower, we use our force out into the world, we use direct action. And yes, whenever there's friction, it's always going to be, now, don't misunderstand me, not every little tiny thing that happens is some deep issue for you. You know, people are always like, what does this mean? What does this mean? And people become so self-involved trying to overcome their egos, you know, that their egos just get bigger and bigger. It just doesn't, it's not, and a lot of times there's no possible way to parse out what it means. It's just too far gone in the past, or it isn't the point. Because the only real point is just to stay on the mountain. As I said, it doesn't make any difference what all the personalities of all these little figures are. If you can stay centered, they cease to even to be a factor. However, if they have off-centered you, you have to then decide, what am I going to do about it? Because the only responsibility you have, and the only responsibility worth having, is your consciousness. Because all you ever experience is your consciousness. You have to think about that. It's an extremely important factor. No matter what's going on around you, all you are ever experiencing is your consciousness. You think these people or these things or these situations are affecting you, but if you held on to the right state of consciousness, they would have no effect on you. You can watch yourself at different times and see that. So when something affects your consciousness, that is your spiritual practice. At that point, you have to then decide, what am I going to do? Because now I've lost the game temporarily and I have to get back on it. So you go and do Kriya, you chant, you introspect, you ask people who know better than you what you ought to do, you run away from the situation, you just use every single thing that you have, including, and I haven't gotten there yet, including using prayer and the power of God to help you and harmonize this. It's a wonderful thing to bring that divine power into the relationship and to pray for the other person if it doesn't unsettle you to do so.
That's not ego-based, like forgiving them, praying.
Well, what you pray for, okay, this was Brenda's question, so let's go there now because a lot of time has passed. Let me think how to say this. The greatest power that the devotee has is the power of God and Guru. I can't tell you how many times people have come to me with very difficult situations, and I said, have you really ask Master to help you? And when it really comes down to it, the answer a lot of times is no. Didn't want to bother him, didn't think it was important enough, was embarrassed to bring it up, didn't think it was, you know, just all these different questions. So we have to start with understanding that Divine Mother is our ally, whether we think of Divine Mother, Christ, Master, however we do it.